wall of Hurricane Harvey has started to make landfall here on the Texas coast. Already in Corpus Christi, Texas, more than 30,000 people are without power, and things are only expected to get worse.
This is all happening right now as we come on the air, and the situation is unfortunately dire. People trapped in their flooded out homes. They are fleeing to their attics, taking to social media, begging for a rescue.
Hurricane Harvey made landfall in Texas on the 25th of August 2017, unleashing widespread devastation along the Gulf Coast. It was initially a Category 1 hurricane, but it rapidly intensified into a Category 4, with wind speeds exceeding 130 miles per hour. However, the slow-moving nature of Harvey compounded its impact, prolonging the storm's effects over several days. As Harvey lingered over southeastern Texas, it unleashed unprecedented rainfall, with some areas receiving over 50 inches of rain. The torrential downpours overwhelmed rivers, bayous, and reservoirs, leading to catastrophic flooding that submerged homes, roads, and entire neighborhoods. Thousands of residents were displaced, seeking refuge in shelters or on rooftops awaiting rescue. The disaster prompted a massive response effort, including federal, state, and local agencies, as well as numerous volunteers and first responders. The U.S. Coast Guard, National Guard, and other emergency personnel conducted rescue operations using boats, helicopters, and high-water vehicles to reach stranded residents in perilous conditions. Tragically, 107 people lost their lives during the storm, with 103 of those fatalities occurring in Texas. In the aftermath of the disaster, communication infrastructure was severely disrupted, making it challenging for people to contact their loved ones. Flooded roads hindered travel, complicating efforts to check on friends and family members. The morning before the hurricane struck, 38-year-old realtor Crystal McDowell had been in touch with friends and family, preparing for the impending storm. She had posted on her Facebook account, telling people to stay safe out there. Somewhere amidst the chaos of the hurricane, however, Crystal vanished. Crystal McDowell was born to parents Pamela Sue Serrett and Anthony Paul Waters on the 26th of October, 1979. Her name had been inspired by the drug that her parents were both addicted to, crystal methamphetamine. When Crystal was born, she had the drug in her system, as Pamela had been unable to kick the addiction while pregnant. Growing up in an unstable environment, tragedy was never too far away. And when Crystal was just 11 years old, both of her parents died within the space of 6 months. She was moved from family member to family member and found herself the victim of sexual abuse before she was sent away to Oklahoma. Then when Crystal was 13 years old, she was abducted by a child predator, held hostage in a chicken coop, and sexually assaulted until she managed to escape. Eventually, Crystal's uncle, Jeff Walters, and his wife took Crystal under their wing and brought her over to them in Baytown, Texas. Despite the hardships that she had faced, Crystal excelled in school, and her friendly nature and quick wit made people gravitate towards her. After Crystal graduated from school, she was keen to make her own way in the world, so she entered the world of employment. She started working for ExpressJet Airlines, where she held a number of positions, including flight attendant and training instructor. As her role as the flight attendant, Crystal got to travel the world, meeting new people and experiencing new cultures. It was a stark difference to the life that Crystal had once known. Then in 2007, Crystal settled down with Stephen McDowell, a father of one and a shipping manager. With a good career, Crystal became the breadwinner of the family. Her hard work allowed them to purchase a comfortable home together, along with some flashy cars. Those that knew the couple said that Stephen had an obsessive love for his wife. Crystal's aunt Cindy recalled, Like if she wanted her feet rubbed, he would rub her feet. If she wanted her hair brushed, he would brush her hair. Crystal wasn't just Stephen's world, sun and stars, but she was the one who brought home the money as well. The couple went on to have two children together, Madden and Maui, and Crystal juggled being a mother and having a demanding career. The couple went on to have two children together, Madden and Maui, and Crystal juggled being a mother and having a demanding career. But she made it work. Her friend Mandy Avaloth said of her, "She's a goofball at times for sure, but very caring. Everybody that has met her just thinks the world of her. She has a big heart and she loves her kids." But after 10 years of marriage, the relationship between Crystal and Stephen was in troubled waters. Towards the latter part of 2016, Crystal and Stephen's marriage reached its breaking point. She confided in friends, expressing that they had drifted apart. Specifically, Crystal felt a lack of challenge from Stephen. She yearned for a partner who would motivate her to reach greater heights, to strive for success. But Stephen didn't fit that mold. He had grown accustomed to the comfortable lifestyle that Crystal had provided him. A nice home, an expensive car, and every material desire fulfilled. As Cindy remarked, Stephen was okay with just stepping back, being the house person. Stephen's daughter from a previous relationship, Krista McDowell, further observed, "He was the dad. She was more of the provider." So in early 2017, Crystal made the difficult decision to file for divorce, signalling the definitive end of their marriage. The divorce was finalised in June, but by now Crystal had already moved on with a man named Paul Hargrove, a local jeweller who lived in Baytown. They had met when Crystal came in to Robson's Diamond Jewellers, where he worked to have a ring remounted. Much like Crystal, he too had been divorced, and the two entered their new relationship knowing exactly what they wanted. They had learned from their previous relationships and were ready to put it all into their new relationship with one another. This new relationship moved very quickly, and the couple had already exchanged I love yous. They'd even been planning a trip to Belgium. Crystal and Stephen shared custody of the girls, and they both moved out of the marital home. Crystal purchased a townhouse on Ward Road, close to Paul, and she even helped Stephen buy a new place in Legends Bay. But Crystal's home needed to undergo renovations, so in August of 2017, Crystal moved back in with her ex-husband Stephen. It was just to be for a short while, as the renovations were completed. Despite the uncommon living arrangements, Crystal and Stephen made it work for the sake of their two children. Crystal stayed in the master bedroom downstairs, while Stephen slept in the spare bedroom upstairs. Despite the ongoing renovations, Crystal's life was slotting into place, and she was the happiest she had been in some time. She had found love again and had just embarked on a new career path. Her job as a flight attendant had required her to spend a lot of time away from her young children, who were 8 years old and 5 years old. Having experienced the loss of her parents at a tender age, Crystal understood the fragility of life, and this fueled her desire to spend as much time with her children as possible. Recently, her uncle Jeff presented her with an opportunity to join him as an estate agent in the family-run business. Recognising the potential for a more stable work-life balance, Crystal eagerly accepted the offer and immersed herself in her new role. She found immense fulfillment in guiding clients towards their dream homes, while simultaneously forging a path towards her own goals. Jeff fondly reminisced. She said herself she was the happiest she had ever been in her life. Just the day preceding the onslaught of Hurricane Harvey, Crystal had plans to pick up her children from Stephen before he left for work that morning. The night before, she had been staying with her boyfriend Paul at his home, approximately 12 minutes away from Stephen's home. Rising at 6:30 a.m., Crystal and Paul prepared for the day ahead. After bidding farewell to Paul with a kiss, Crystal embarked on her journey in her black C-Class Mercedes, bracing herself for the impending storm. Shortly after she left, Crystal reached out to Paul via text message, letting him know that the road conditions were good. She mentioned her intent to either remain at Stephen's home with her son and daughter, or, depending on traffic and weather conditions, possibly take them out somewhere. At the same time, Crystal was also texting her uncle, Jeff. She told him that Paul had surprised her with a real estate billboard, with her face emblazoned on it, offering her services. That morning, as she drove over to Stephen's home, was the first time she had seen the billboard. She texted Paul, "You're so sweet." In response, Paul said, "I love you and I'll always support you." With Hurricane Harvey approaching, Paul became concerned when he realized he hadn't heard from Crystal for a couple of hours. He later recollected, "It's not like Crystal not to reply back very quickly, so I thought that was kind of weird, thinking she was with family, getting ready for things." Paul texted Crystal and rang her number multiple times, but Crystal never replied and she never picked up. Paul started reaching out to Crystal's friends to see if any of them had seen or heard from her, but nobody had. Paul then made contact with her uncle Jeff. He said that he had heard from her that morning when she texted him about the billboards, but it had been silence ever since. The search for Crystal McDowell began even before Hurricane Harvey struck the area, initiated by her friends and family. However, initial efforts to involve detectives were met with seemingly nonchalant responses, as the storm had disrupted communications and made it challenging to locate individuals. With electricity poles down and internet connections unstable, authorities assumed that Crystal might have sought refuge somewhere and would eventually make contact. Crystal's family's concern grew, as they knew she would have made every effort to reach out to them, regardless of the storm's impact. Her uncle Jeff commented, "We tried to plead with them, and they just wanted to wait and see. I know a lot of officers had water in their own homes. That was a bad time. Not that there ever is a good time. The storm has definitely complicated things." Despite the complications caused by the hurricane, Crystal's family persisted in their search efforts. Paul had security cameras at his home, and it showed Crystal leaving that morning in her car. That meant that she had left Paul's place safe and well. But what happened to her on the way to Stephen's place? She had indeed been texting on her way there, as confirmed by a text message she had sent to Stephen, which read, "On my way. Do you have water? Looks like I may stay here with the kids. It seems just like rain." Stephen said that he sat and waited for Crystal to appear, but she never arrived. Family and friends pleaded with detectives to take the disappearance seriously, even as many officers dealt with their own storm-related challenges, such as rescues. The 911 dispatch center had been inundated with phone calls, missing people, trapped people, and people left without homes.
Overwhelmed emergency responders were forced to triage tens of thousands of calls, taking care of only those who needed help urgently.
I know people are trying to reach 911, may not be getting a response. I understand that. The system, there are a lot of people who are calling. But let me ask, let's give preference to the life-threatening calls.
Flooding in the area further complicated the search, making it more difficult to navigate and locate any potential clues. The turning point in the investigation came a couple of days later.
See this black car right here? This Mercedes? Two people got out of it, and it doesn't belong to them.
That was a Snapchat video from a woman who came across a partially submerged Mercedes outside of Motel 6 in Mont Bellevue. It was soon uncovered that this was Crystal's Mercedes. It was located in an area she had not been intending to visit on the day that she disappeared. It had been left unlocked, and the keys were left on the dashboard. It was as if somebody expected, and even hoped, that somebody would come along and steal it. But because of the flooding, the car couldn't be stolen. The water had risen so much that it couldn't be moved from where it was parked. This unexpected discovery finally raised suspicions among detectives. The crystal's disappearance was not simply a result of the hurricane, but possibly involved foul play. Detectives began to consider the possibility that the storm might have been used as a cover-up for her disappearance. Sheriff Brian Hawthorne commented, "We are hampered by some of the flood issues, but we are as aggressive as ever trying to locate and find Crystal McDowell." The family were pleased to have the support of the detectives in their search for Crystal, and Sheriff Hawthorne reassured them by stating, "I have expanded the resources and now have a team of about 4 investigators on it. The flood duties and responsibilities of high water rescue and securing people is slowing down. As the need is reducing, I'm adding more resources to the investigation." Crystal's car was towed to the crime scene lab, but the floodwaters had made it impossible to get any kind of evidence from it. If there were any fingerprints or any evidence that could indicate what had happened to Crystal, the floodwaters had washed them away. But the detectives had another idea up their sleeves. The motel had surveillance cameras outside, and so did a handful of other businesses in the area. They hoped that one of these surveillance cameras may have captured somebody driving and parking Crystal's car. The time frame that they needed to scour through was so large, and detectives knew that it would take a number of days. But still, they were determined. While the footage from the surveillance cameras were being examined, detectives turned their attention to Crystal's cell phone. In particular, her cell phone data. It showed that her cell phone had pinged within a 3-mile radius of 1210 Park Street, which was Baytown's Park Service Centre. It's located in Goose Creek Park, a heavily wooded area with creeks running throughout it. Crystal had no reason to be in that area. It wasn't too far away from Paul's home, but it wasn't that close to Stephen's home, where she had been travelling to that morning. Paul posted about the cell phone pings on his Facebook account, and people came out in droves to search for Crystal. The detectives working on the case weren't too happy. They said that the volunteer search could hamper the official search, as people could inadvertently be destroying potential evidence. Plus, it was dangerous for people to be searching that specific area. Because of the hurricane, the creeks had flooded, and moccasins and alligators could have been disrupted. The detectives embarked on the area themselves, but the search wasn't easy. They fanned out further afield, utilising ATVs to comb the marshy areas around Cedar Bayou. They also called in the assistance of Texas EquiSearch, a non-profit organisation that specialises in organising and conducting searches for missing persons. Despite the exhaustive searches in the area, no trace of Crystal could be found. In an effort to glean some more information about her whereabouts, her Uncle Jeff offered a $5,000 reward, but it did little to bring forth any leads or tips. It wasn't too surprising that nobody had seen anything out of the ordinary, just as a hurricane was blowing in. People were too preoccupied with getting home safely and making sure that they were prepared with food and water. The days continued to trickle past, with no new developments in the case, and Crystal's family were desperate for some more information. As detectives delved deeper into their investigation, suspicions began to swirl around Stephen, her ex-husband. While Crystal had texted Stephen that morning to say she was going to stay at home with the children, Stephen claimed to detectives that he received a further text message from her at 9:30 a.m. In this second text message, Crystal told Stephen that she was going to pick up the children and then drive them to Dallas to ride out the storm. This unexpected change of course puzzled Crystal's family, especially Jeff, who was planning his own trip to Dallas to ride out the storm. The timing of that second text message added to the intrigue. Crystal had left Paul's home hours before, suggesting that she would have already been at Stephen's home by 9:30 a.m. With Mother's Day just around the corner, why not treat your mom to something special that'll make her feel amazing? Enter Nutrafol, the hair growth supplement that Scott's dermatologist everywhere giving it a big thumbs up. Users are singing its praises, reporting thicker, stronger, and faster growing hair with way less shedding. It's basically the ultimate hair solution in a bottle. Nutrafol understands that everyone's hair is different, so they offer a wide range of formulas tailored to tackle specific concerns. Personally, I've jumped on the Nutrafol bandwagon as well, incorporating their vegan supplements into my routine. Let me tell you, the results are amazing. My hair has never looked or felt better. The magic of Nutrafol lies in its ability to tackle all the stuff that messes with your hair, from stress and hormones to environmental factors and lifestyle choices. So why wait? Treat your mom, or yourself, this Mother's Day and start your journey to luscious locks with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering Morbidology listeners $10 off their first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Morbidology. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Morbidology. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Morbidology. Detectives paid Stephen a visit, and he told them the same thing he had told them from the beginning. Crystal had failed to pick the kids up that morning, and he had no clue where she was. While inside his home, detectives observed a black bag beside the computer, which contained real estate documents. When Crystal left Paul's home that morning, she had been carrying a black bag. But according to Sheriff Hawthorne, the bag that Crystal was carrying was more like an overnight bag, while the bag found in Stephen's home was a black briefcase. He stated, it was not something a woman would use as an overnight bag. He said that Crystal had been staying with Stephen, so the fact that a bag was there wasn't too out of the ordinary if it was indeed Crystal's. He had his own theory about what was going on, and he commented, I think that there was probably some animosity between the boyfriend and the husband. The husband might think that the boyfriend has something to do with it. The boyfriend might think that the husband has something to do with it. He mentioned that there was a long list of persons of interest, from Paul and Stephen, to even Uncle Jeff. Then on the 5th of September, Crystal's family hired a private detective from Unlimited Investigations and Research Services of Liberty, who started working alongside the detectives. As the search for Crystal continued, the family continued to be suspicious about Stephen, in particular Paul. He commented in the media that in the week leading up to Crystal's disappearance, she and Stephen had been arguing frequently. But Paul wasn't truly aware of just how bad the marriage between the couple had been. Stephen's behaviour had been deeply troubling from the moment they first got together. He had exhibited obsessive tendencies towards Crystal, even resorting to emotional manipulation whenever their relationship hit a rough patch. Stephen would often threaten to kill himself if Crystal ever considered leaving him, effectively coercing her to stay in an unhappy marriage. Stephen had displayed selfish and manipulative traits, insisting on having things his way and throwing temper tantrums when he didn't get his desired outcome. During their divorce proceedings, Crystal had even said that Crystal had threatened to kill her, the children, and then himself. He took the divorce very hard. Crystal had been the sole provider for the family, but even following the divorce, she still helped him out financially. Some people who knew Stephen noticed some dark changes in him in the wake of the divorce. Over the course of a couple of days, he changed his Facebook profile photo to a photo of a grave, followed by a photo of a grim reaper, and then a photo of him and Crystal. One particularly alarming incident occurred when Crystal called police to report that Stephen had threatened to harm himself and their children. This call had come after the children failed to show up for school, prompting immediate concern for their safety. Despite police efforts to locate Stephen, he remained elusive until the following morning, when he reappeared with the children. Stephen was desperate to win Crystal back, and behind the scenes he had been harboring plans to propose to Crystal again, and he intended to do so on an upcoming family cruise. He had purchased clothing for the both of them, including a white dress and suit, in anticipation of the occasion. However, in the lead-up to Crystal's disappearance, she told Stephen that he had been uninvited, and that she was taking her new boyfriend, Paul, instead. While Crystal and Paul had been dating for a little while, she had wanted to keep it a secret from Stephen. As she said to her Aunt Cindy, "He will kill me." But with the cruise coming up, Crystal needed to let Stephen know that she had moved on. Apparently Stephen didn't take it too well, and Crystal told friends on Facebook Messenger that she was getting a little scared of Stephen. The lead up to the end of their marriage had been tumultuous, but after they broke up, things seemed to improve for a while. Crystal had felt safe staying in the same home with Stephen, but after breaking the news that he was uninvited to the family cruise, Crystal seemed to be afraid. It was as if the old Stephen was making a reappearance, and now, Crystal was missing. The family weren't hopeful that Crystal was going to be found alive, but neither were the detectives. Sheriff Hawthorne commented, "I hate to use the term presumed dead, because there are two children, so I hope that we find her alive and well, but I don't feel real confident about it." At this point, detectives were still scouring through the surveillance footage from Motel 6 and the surrounding area. They gained access to the surveillance footage taken from outside a Shell gas station that was next to Motel 6. As they watched the footage, a suspicious individual caught their attention. His behaviour raised red flags. He appeared agitated, constantly glancing over his shoulder in the direction of Motel 6. His actions became even more suspicious when he approached a trash can at the gas station and appeared to dispose of something, pushing it deep down into the bin. The man then turned around and his face came into view of the camera. It was Stephen McDowell. As detectives continued their investigation into Crystal's disappearance, they meticulously analysed surveillance footage for any clues about Stephen's whereabouts and actions. They knew that he was at the Shell gas station, and kept looking over towards Motel 6, almost as if he was checking to see if Crystal's car was still there. Detectives then went back to the Motel 6 footage from the hours before, and came across Crystal's car being driven into the parking lot. Moments later, a man climbed out of the car and walked away. While the footage was grainy, detectives could see that the man looked remarkably similar to Stephen. Despite their suspicions, detectives lacked concrete evidence linking Stephen to Crystal's disappearance, or confirming that she was indeed dead. They confronted Stephen again, but he maintained his innocence and denied any involvement in Crystal's disappearance. With no tangible evidence to support their suspicions, detectives faced a frustrating challenge in building a case against Stephen. Concern for Crystal's children, Madden and Maui, weighed heavily on their minds. They feared for the safety of the children in Stephen's care, especially given their suspicions that he might have been involved in Crystal's disappearance. District Attorney Cheryl Leake took decisive action upon recognizing the potential danger to Crystal's children in Stephen's care. Collaborating with Family and Protective Services, they arranged for Madden and Maui to be removed from Stephen's custody and placed with Crystal's Aunt Cindy on the 8th of September. Do you ever indulge in life's little luxuries? You know, like splurging on that extra legroom upgrade when you're jetting off on vacation, or snagging that killer deal during a sale frenzy. We've all got our moments. But let me ask you this, why should your health be any different? When it comes to finding the perfect doctor, settling just isn't an option. That's where ZocDoc comes in. With their handy app and website, you can effortlessly browse and compare top-rated, in-network doctors right in your area. Say goodbye to endless phone calls and waiting on hold. Now, it's all about browsing, choosing, and booking your appointment in a snap. ZocDoc has your back with verified reviews from real patients, so you can trust you're making the best choice for your health. Whether you're due for a routine checkup or need some specialized care, ZocDoc's network of doctors has got you covered. Seriously, if I knew about ZocDoc a few years ago, when I was on the hunt for the perfect doctor, life would have been a breeze. Go to ZocDoc.com/morbidology and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That is ZocDoc.com/morbidology. ZocDoc.com/morbidology. District Attorney Leake understood the emotional impact this would have on Stephen, anticipating that it would be a significant tipping point. Stephen was brought into the interrogation room once more, and he broke down. He said that he was exhausted and begged to go home, but promised that he would return the next morning. The detectives thought that they were close to a confession, but since they had no direct evidence against Stephen, they had to let him go. They just hoped that he would stay true to his word and come back the next morning. That night, Stephen's daughter, Krista, was bartending when her father called her after he left the police station. Despite being away for university, Stephen urgently asked her to come over, stressing that it was important. Krista had been planning to visit the next day anyway, but Stephen was adamant she come over right away. After wrapping up her shift, she drove to her father's now mostly deserted home. Crystal had been absent for weeks, and now the children were gone as well. Krista reached Baytown at about 3:30 a.m., parked her car, and knocked on the front door. Stephen answered, and he was visibly irritated. He told Krista that he was going to be arrested the next morning, but stressed that he was innocent. He said detectives believed he killed Crystal, but said he had no clue what had happened to her. Stephen was clearly preparing for the worst. He handed Krista some photo albums, financial documents, and even the keys to his cherished Mustang. Despite Krista's attempts to reason with him, the conversation veered sharply. While Stephen initially professed his innocence, he then told Krista that detectives had offered him a reduced sentence if he told them where Crystal's body was. Krista replied and said to her father that that didn't matter since he didn't know where Crystal was. Stephen then bluntly responded, "What if it's true?" He then looked away and began to cry. The detectives arrived at Stephen's home in the hours that followed and took him back to the police station. He was presented with the video footage of him at the Shell gas station and at Motel 6. But detectives had since come across another video of Stephen from that day. It was him walking into Walmart and then coming back out with a bicycle. He then cycled off in the direction of his own home. The detectives believed that he had dropped Crystal's car off and then cycled away. Stephen continued to profess his innocence, but then there was a tipping point. He asked whether he could talk to his children, but the detectives told him no. They said that he could see his children, but only if he took them to Crystal's body. Stephen's demeanour appeared to relax. He slumped down in the chair and simply replied, "Okay." Stephen recounted to detectives that the morning Crystal vanished, she had actually arrived safe and well at his home. He admitted to fabricating his earlier claim that she had never appeared. According to Stephen, he had questioned Crystal's whereabouts the previous night. While her home was under renovation, she had opted to spend the night with Paul instead of Stephen. Stephen said that Crystal then told him that she didn't love him, and that he needed to come to terms with the fact that their marriage was over. Stephen confessed to detectives that he had approached Crystal from behind and choked her.
"I squeezed her. But what are you really doing?
Yes. Okay, I did that.
chokehold or something? Did she say anything when that was going on, or did she fight, or what happened?
She said I was scaring her.
Stephen said that as he put his arm around Crystal, she told him that he was scaring her. Following her murder, Stephen confessed to covering Crystal's face with the Target bag to spare himself from seeing it. He then maneuvered her lifeless form into a fetal position, stuffed her into an industrial-grade garbage bag, and subsequently placed her within the trunk of her own black Mercedes. He said that he needed to move quick because a repair worker was coming out to the home that morning. Under the cover of darkness in the early morning, Stephen left his children unattended at home and disposed of Crystal's body. He transported her to a densely wooded area in western Chambers County, not too far away from his home. Upon confessing, Stephen guided the detectives to the precise location. Despite the rugged and dense terrain, the detectives discerned the pungent odour of human decomposition immediately, confirming that they were on the right track. After an arduous search through the brush, detectives eventually located the badly decomposed body of Crystal. On the 9th of September, 44-year-old Stephen McDowell was charged with the first-degree murder of Crystal. He was ordered to be held on $500,000 bail and was appointed Keaton Kirkwood as his defence attorney. The arrest hadn't come as much of a surprise to Crystal's loved ones. Her good friend, Morgan Raimondi, had her own theory of what happened, stating, "When Stephen decided that if he couldn't have her, nobody else could, he also made the decision for her children, her family, and her friends. He took her away from all of us because of his one selfish act." Crystal and Stephen's children were now left without a mother or a father, as they were taken in by the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. Straight away, Jeff stepped up and said he would take the children under his wing until a permanent plan was thought up. Eventually, Crystal's longtime friend, Mandy Avalos, took custody of the children. She was an aerospace worker in Las Vegas and had known Crystal since she was just a teenager. Then in November, Stephen was indicted by a grand jury, and his trial was scheduled for November of 2019. But before then, the trial was moved to Galveston. Stephen's defense team had filed a motion saying that there had been too much publicity for Stephen to get a fair trial. By the 6th of June 2019, a jury had been selected and opening statements were ready to begin in the constitutional courtroom of the Galveston County Justice Center. Prosecutor Cheryl Leake laid out some grim facts about Crystal's upbringing. She told the jury she wanted a husband, a home, children, to be loved and give and receive love like she had never given or received before in her life. She said that over the 10-year marriage, whenever Crystal threatened to leave Stephen, he would threaten to kill himself. She stated, "So she divorced him. Then he started to threaten to harm her and the kids and himself. She was beginning to be more afraid, and apparently, her fears came true. On August 25, 2017, he made good on those threats and choked her to death in front of their 5-year-old daughter. For the first time, it was publicly revealed that Crystal had been killed in front of her own daughter. After the prosecutor stepped down, defense attorney Keaton Kirkwood opted out of providing an opening statement. The testimony got underway with Paul Hargrave, Crystal's boyfriend, who recounted the morning of her disappearance. The detectives who interviewed Stephen testified, followed by the video of his confession. Stephen had asked for the death penalty to be taken off the table in exchange for his confession, and the prosecution had agreed. The next witness was Mandy Avalos, Crystal's friend, who had custody of Madden and Maui. She testified that after Stephen was arrested, Maui had come to her and said she needed to tell her a secret. The 5-year-old girl said that she had woken up on the 25th of August 2017 and had heard her mother and father arguing. She said she went through a bathroom into their bedroom and saw her father push her mother to the bed and put his hands over her nose and mouth. Maui said that she went over to the bed and stood there, but her father continued to do what he was doing. At one stage, her mother looked over to her, but her father refused to move or stop until her mother was completely motionless. Maui said that her father then told her to go upstairs and never tell a soul about what she had just seen. The jury were then shown a video of Maui describing what she had seen to Prosecutor Leek. Maui had made some drawings of what had happened, including one which asked, "Why did you get mad and kill Mom and make her not breathe?" Maui said that her mother and father were arguing because her mother had a new boyfriend. She said she heard her mother say that she was going to go away and take the children with her. She described how her father had replied, "No, you're not," before he pushed her onto the bed. At one point, she said her father turned to look at her, and he looked angry. She recalled her mother trying to say help, but no sound was coming out of her mouth. Maui also said that typically she and her brother slept in their father's bed, but the night before her mother was killed, they had been told to sleep in their own beds. After the video, the prosecution rested their case. Defense attorney Kirkwood then told the jury to focus on the evidence and the discrepancies. He then called Tamara Shipley to the witness stand. She was Stephen's former neighbor, and she described him as a sweet guy who would always stop and chat with her or bring her food. Stephen's mother, Mary Louise Johnson, and his sisters, Heather and Erica, all testified that he was a great father who seemed to get along with Crystal. The defense then called Stephen to the witness stand, where he surprisingly said that he was guilty. However, he refused to go through with the legal paperwork required to officially plead guilty. He said that the issue was that the indictment said that he had choked Crystal. Stephen then claimed that he had killed Crystal by accident, by hugging her to death. On the witness stand, he said, "I just wanted to hold her. I just wanted to start over. I was tired of arguing and I was tired of fighting." He changed various parts of his confession and told the jury that when Crystal arrived at his home in the morning, she was in a good mood. He even claimed that they had sex, but then an argument broke out because he was supposed to get a document notarized that would allow Crystal to take the children on a cruise without him. However, he never got the document notarized. He testified, "She said she didn't love me anymore and hadn't loved me in a long time. She had never said that before. I told her to stop and I begged her to quit being mean to me. I grabbed her and I put my arms around her." He said that they were standing up when he was hugging her and said that Crystal's body then became limp and she fell. According to Stephen, they fell onto the bed and he realized that Crystal was dead. His new version of events completely contradicted the story of his now 7-year-old daughter, and he suggested that she made the entire story up. Some text messages were presented afterwards to show the tumultuous nature of their relationship. 2 days before Crystal was killed, she had texted Stephen, "Please move on with your life and stop manipulating the kids and using them as pawns. You're still acting crazy. I wanted a divorce years ago." The jury deliberated for just over 3 hours before finding Stephen McDowell guilty of the murder of Crystal McDowell. As the verdict was announced, he showed no semblance of emotion. The sentencing phase began immediately, and Stephen was facing a sentence of life in prison. Stephen said to the court that it was his wish that their children be legally adopted, and that their names be changed to Crystal's maiden name. He stated, "I want them to have a last name they can be proud of." Stephen said that he was sorry for what had happened and that he could never forgive himself. During the closing arguments, Prosecutor Leek touched on Stephen's claims of what had happened. She stated, "He hugged her to death. I have to say, that's a new one for me." Stephen McDowell was then sentenced to 50 years in prison. He was ordered to serve at least 25 before he'd be considered for parole. As the sentence was announced, the courtroom erupted into audible gasps. Crystal's uncle, Jeff, later said, "He took her from us and he deserves worse. He was given leniency in my opinion. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. He said he was going to destroy her so she couldn't be with anyone else." Crystal McDowell's life seemed to be in a perpetual state of turbulence from the moment she was born. Despite an unstable upbringing, she believed she had found solace in her marriage to Stephen. After enduring a troubled decade together, Crystal decided to pursue a divorce. At last, it seemed like her life was on an upward trajectory. She embarked on a new career path and found companionship in a new romantic interest. Yet this newfound stability was shattered violently, all because Stephen couldn't come to terms with her moving on. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'd like to say a massive thank you to my newest supporter up on Patreon, Holly. You can join us up on Patreon for as little as $1 a month, and there are absolutely no obligations. You can cancel your subscription at any time. In exchange for your support, I upload ad-free and early release episodes, bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus, behind the scenes, and I also send out a handwritten thank you card along with some cool merch. Patreon really helps independent shows such as Morbidology continue to post, and I genuinely do appreciate the support. If you'd like to support the show another way, please consider leaving me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you may be listening. Ratings and reviews are a super easy way to support a show that you like, and I genuinely do appreciate the feedback. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read some true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.